Most of the years in the past, we read about people having New Year's resolutions. I don't know if they do it too much anymore. It seems this year I didn't see too much on New Year's resolutions. And that may be either I just didn't notice it, or maybe people have made so many resolutions that they can't fulfill that they just stopped. And because usually that's the case. And most of the time I think on resolutions it has to do, I'm going to lose 50 pounds, 100 pounds, 200 pounds, or what it might be. And then people give up on it after a short time. But what if we resolve to put into practice the law of God? Well, we actually have. But where could we find all of the practices of obeying the law of God? We know the Ten Commandments are 10, and we know that obeying God is the first four, and then the 10 commands for dealing with human beings, people, would be the last six, and I think that would cover God too, it would. But if we made that resolve, and just starting right now, and we had to define every single practice, put them down on paper, every single one, how would we start and where would we go? Could we come up with 1,000? Could we come up with 1,000? We would have to take a look and put down 10 commandments. We would divide them, love to God and love to man. And then we would have to define each one in detail, because if we're going to practice them, we have to have some detail to it. How would we do that if we were told we have to come up with 1,000? It'd be a daunting task, wouldn't it? Well, there's one book in the Bible that's done most of the work for us. One book in the Bible, when you stop to think of it. And where we would go, and I'll give you a hint, it's in the Old Testament. And you're kind of looking at it. Is it fair to share with your husband and wife what it would be? Yeah, it is. It's okay. But it would be in the Old Testament, and it's in the writings. And there are 9 sections. Now, if you would have asked me a couple days ago how many sections are in this book, I would not have known. I've just learned that there were 9 sections in this one book. But there are 31 chapters, so would you kind of know? You know it's in the writings, so it would be Psalms, maybe Ecclesiastes, maybe Proverbs. And out of those, you'd say, too many Psalms, that's not 31. And then Ecclesiastes wouldn't do it. That's only 12. So what has 31? And you'd come up with Proverbs. Proverbs. Proverbs is actually the book to go to find out the details in practicing the obedience to God's law. Now, I said 1,000. Actually, there's a duplication. There's a repetition when it comes to the Proverbs, because you find one statement mentioned 4 or 5 times, maybe. And so maybe it's only 800 or so, but there's quite a few. So what we're going to do today is mine the book of Proverbs. I was asked after services, was that mined, M-I-N-D, or we'll say mining the book of Proverbs, M-I-N-I-N-G. Now, we know where to go. The miners who went to California back in, what was it? The gold rush of 49, something like that. So when they went, some of them struck, very few struck. In fact, it was President Donald Trump's grandfather, I believe, who followed the miners around, and he made more money setting up bars than mining for gold himself. That's a true story. And I think in one case, they didn't hit pay dirt right away. He had set up a hotel. And I think he brought in some beautiful women to serve at the bar, .. But by the time he had this hotel built, this is all free information, what happened was they found they couldn't strike gold, so he took the whole building and put it on a ship and sent it down the river, and then the ship crashed in the middle of the stream, and so that was the end of that. But anyway, you have to know where to go. What's so nice about mining the Proverbs is we do have a place to go. There's other stories, too, where people have set up camp and then went out every day to look for gold and finally didn't find it and tore the camp down. And here comes another guy along, and right where the camp was, they strike gold. So they're sitting right on top of it. You've heard of some of these stories, and I believe that one is true from what I understand. At least it makes a good story if it's not. So in mining the book of Proverbs, we're going to take a quick look at what the critics say, and I'll just answer that one right away because we don't need to spend a lot of time on that. But some of the critics say that these are Proverbs from Egyptian manuscripts. There's a section, especially Proverbs 22 to 24, and it was in the 18th dynasty, I guess, of Egypt, where literally they do have these Proverbs or these pithy sayings that are very familiar with, in fact, there are 27 of them, very familiar with what you find in Proverbs 22 through 24. And the critics, of course, say, well, see, these are not inspired by God at all. But they don't contemplate the possibility that maybe the Egyptians got it from the Hebrews. And so there have been studies, and by the way, they came across these in 1888, but there are studies that show that the Egyptians could just as well have received these proverbs from the Hebrews. Now, in one sense, it wouldn't make too much difference because we know Solomon, who put these proverbs together, went to wise men and he studied books. There were no doubt a lot of manuscripts at that time because Ecclesiastes 12 tells us of the reading of books, there is no end. And that was back in 900 B.C. So back then, there was just way too many books to put on your bookshelf. My brother finishes a book and he gives it to me. When I finish it, if I read it, I put it on the bookshelf. It looks nice on bookshelves. It does. But he doesn't have a very big bookshelf. But there is so much to read, isn't there? And it even says that, this is Ecclesiastes 12, that there's a weariness to reading, a weariness to studying. And Solomon said that, it seems, in the last chapter in Ecclesiastes 12. But anyway, we can take a look at critics, and it's not unusual for critics to say that the Bible is not from God. But wherever the information came, before any proverb would have been put down as a proverb, God would have inspired it to be there. Because there are some very true sayings that other people have come up with that are already biblically based. They already come from the mind of God. So which comes first? Did God come first or did the philosopher come first? Did Abraham Lincoln say you can prove, you can please some of the people some of the time and all of the people part of the time and all of the people none of the time or something, whatever it was, part of the time. Anyway, you know the saying. But actually, he got it from a philosopher, didn't he? So some people say, well, he started it, and no, it was started here. Well, maybe Abraham came up with a lot of these sayings that the Egyptians had, too. Or Joseph, because Joseph, pretty smart man, as we heard mentioned, his name at least, today. He could have come up with some very good sayings based on his experiences in Egypt. So anyway, we'll leave it at that. The background is Solomon. Now, I'll go to 1 Kings here, chapter 4 and verse 32, for a reference. 1 Kings, chapter 4 and verse 32. Because when you read about Solomon, you see that he was constantly delving into and reading Proverbs or creating Proverbs and creating songs, as we'll see. Here in, what I say it was, 1 Kings 4 and verse 32. 1 Kings 4 and verse 32. Here it says, he spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. So you can see he was a pretty busy man. You can also read, I believe it's in chapter 4, where he was a chemist. He was a physicist. He was an architect. He was an engineer. He was almost everything. He was a botanist. He delved into every aspect of almost everything. And he was a very, very wise man. God gave him all of these gifts, of course. But Solomon is the one who put all of these together. Now, what we have, if you counted them up, you would count in Proverbs 975 Proverbs. So there were 3,000, but only 975 are listed here. There's also a book called The Acts of Solomon, but we don't have that. We don't know where it went. It may have burned down in the Egyptian library at Alexandria back whenever. They probably stored some of this information. When did that library burn down? I can't remember. It was pretty close to the year zero, wasn't it? Somewhere in there. But anyway, one of you historians might know about it. So, but anyway, there was a huge library at Alexandria, ancient manuscripts, and they all disappeared. But Solomon was the one, and God used him. Some say that he's closer to, or his kingdom that he ruled over was closer to any millennial-type kingdom that we could find since the world's begun. You find in 1 Kings also that he ruled in peace. There were no wars during his time. He just had a lot of peace treaties, married a lot of women whose fathers were the kings and the rulers over other countries, and so everything was fine. Not spiritually, but everything was at peace while he was ruling. So we have the background there. The Proverbs are divided into three sections, and again, we don't need to spend a lot of time on this. And I suppose we could look at it a little bit differently than some who came up with this information. But basically, from the standpoint of view of who wrote the Proverbs, we have about 9 sections, counting an introduction. The introduction is the first 6 verses of Proverbs 1. Gives you what we would call today a specific purpose statement, SPS. So this is why we would have the Proverbs. And you have then basically 9 chapters all the way through chapter 9 and verse 18, which are called the words of the wise. We don't know who all these wise men were, but you can just kind of think who were the wise men before Solomon. David would have no doubt come up with some of these, but they were words that Solomon himself didn't come up with when he was meditating at night. Or sitting down trying to put, you know, pithy sayings together. He would have borrowed, so to speak, these from other sources. And then you have the third section, which would be the Proverbs of Solomon himself. And that goes all the way through Proverbs 22, almost all the way through Proverbs 22. So from chapter 10 and on through 22:16, these are all the Proverbs of Solomon. Not all of them, but most of them that you find within Solomon itself, except for what Hezekiah put in a little bit later. Fourth section would be about 2 chapters. In chapter 22 through 24, these are the words of wise individuals. These are the ones that you'd find in the Egyptian manuscripts. The many of them that would be the same, at least 27 of them for sure. The fifth section are sayings of the wise, and that would be just that one chapter, 24, verse 23, all the way to the end. So 24, verse 23 to the end of the chapter. The sixth session would be chapters 25, 26, 27, 28, and 29. And these are how men are so much better than women. If I didn't have your attention, I know that. No, that's not it at all. These are Solomon's, another set of Solomon's Proverbs, and they're put in by Hezekiah. So Solomon himself had a lot of Proverbs, like we say, it was 3,000, and he only put in so many himself, and then Hezekiah comes along later on and adds all of these that were Solomon's Proverbs, chapters 25 through 29. The seventh section would be the first 33, actually all of chapter 30, the words of Agur. Different author here, the words of Agur. And by the way, the word Agur means fear, A-G-U-R. So these could be the words of those who fear God. Chapter 31, the eighth section. Chapter 31, the first nine verses. This is King Lemuel, as taught by his mother. And then, so it's only nine verses here. And then the last of it, 31:10 through 31:31, and that is, in this case, not a virtuous husband, but a virtuous wife, showing how fantastic a woman is in helping her husband. And she is quite an independent lady, too. So if your wife wants to go out and buy a field, you're going to have to let her. In other words, in that age, when you think that women were under the thumb of their husband, it wasn't exactly as portrayed by many. It would be that the wife has a lot of responsibility, and the husband has married this woman who can really help him out a lot. She's submissive, but also she's going to help her husband not make mistakes as much as possible. In the case of Sarah, remember, God intervened and said, Sarah's right, if you remember that. Okay, a very interesting section here now, and I'll give you the meaning, first of all, of Proverbs. It's Mashal would be how we would transliterate the Hebrew, M-A-S-H-A-L, Mashal, is a proverb. And it's from a root. The word itself means a short, concise, pithy saying. So you have a statement that is very true, stated in just a few words. That would be what Mashal means. And the root of it is interesting. It means likeness or comparison. Likeness or comparison. And when you take a look at the structure of the Proverbs themselves, you would see that Proverbs do follow that root. R-O-O-T. Root in Montana or root someplace else. So I'll give you an example. And the names that you have... The four sections would be, or the construction, as they also call it, would be synonymous, antithetic, synthetic, and comparative. Now, I don't know why they come up these words. We don't necessarily use the word antithetic. When's the last time in daily speaking you use the word antithetic? Antithesis maybe would be a little bit more, but not necessarily. I don't say that that's the antithesis of. How many of you use that word just regularly? I would have had to look it up the first time I ever heard it because I didn't grow up with that word. So I'll give you the four structures of Proverbs in normal language, okay? Similar. Okay, similar. This would be, there are a number of examples, and I'll just give you the one for each. Chapter 14 and verse 19. So let's go to Proverbs. And go to chapter 14 and verse 19. Proverbs 14 and verse 19. The evil will bow before the good. So that's a short, concise, true statement. And then you have a similar statement following. Now, that's not in every proverb. That's just one of the ways that these proverbs are written. So a similar to that same proverb. It's just one verse. And the wicked, that's equal or similar to the evil, the wicked, at the gates of the righteous. And, of course, righteous is similar to good. So that's a similar proverb. That's the construction of it. You have the first statement is like the second, or vice versa. The second statement is like the first. Then what you have next would be antithetic, just the opposite. So you have a statement, and just right after that statement, you come to the opposite. So I would call this opposite. So you have similar, and then second category would be opposite. A good example of this would be Proverbs 17 and verse 22. Proverbs 17 and verse 22. A merry heart does good like medicine. Okay? That's your statement. A merry heart does good like a medicine. And that tells you a few things, too, that they did have medicines. I think the medicines were probably a little bit better at that time and maybe not quite so dangerous, but who knows? I suppose there were medicines that weren't so good. They didn't have to spend as much money, figuring out if the medicine was going to kill you or not back then. They just gave it to the first person they didn't like, and if they died, they stopped using it, I guess. I'm not sure how that went. You can talk to maybe some pharmacist that might be in our presence who knows more how these were tested out. Actually, Mr. Howell was involved in the testing process. So it's an interesting story on the testing of medicines. But notice now, remember, this is an opposite, so you're going to have an opposite. A broken spirit, which is the opposite of a merry heart. A broken spirit dries the bones. It's interesting that through the years, in all of the church areas where we've been, we've seen that individuals can break almost every health law in the book. What I mean by that would be they could eat pork every day of their life. And we're not talking about people in the church in this case. We're talking about relatives, maybe mothers, fathers. And then they keep living and living and living. They never have a disease. They don't have any problem. But the one thing they have is a merry heart, a positive frame of mind. So, and that tells you something about the Spirit of God, too. When we know God's Spirit is love, kindness, gentleness, goodness, patience, forbearance. We see all of those characteristics, those definitions, and we know that if we're that way, we're not going to have dried up bones, right? So first and foremost, the mind. The mind has more power over our body than anything else. But secondly, definitely we can hurt our bodies by eating the wrong food. And it's been proven that the first cat that makes all of these mistakes may not have any problems, but the second cat, the puppy cat, kitty cat, is not going to have the problems. And then the third generation, if they keep breaking these laws, the third kitty cat is going to be problematic, and the fourth kitty cat cannot even flip. Have you read the information on that? It's quite interesting. But notice it's an opposite. Going on, we have what is called a synthetic, which is a little bit like similar, but with this, it's the second clause elaborates the first. So you have a statement, and the second statement is similar to the first, but it's just elaborating the first. So in this, it'd be chapter 19 and verse 11. The discretion of a man makes him slow to anger. Now, what happens is this statement is elaborated on. It's expanded, I guess we would say. And it is to his glory to overlook a transgression. So it's telling you how, in this case. Elaborating on the first statement. And I would just call it expanding. An expanded proverb. An expanded proverb. So the way you are slow to anger would be to overlook a fault, right? So it doesn't bother us. We just overlook it. That's their problem. It's not my problem. That type of thing. And then the last is comparison. They say comparative, but comparison, comparative, either way. And chapter 10 and verse 26 is a good example here. Chapter 10 and verse 26. As vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so you're going to get a comparison, so is a sluggard to those who send him. So when you send someone with a messenger and they don't show up, It's vinegar to your teeth. I mean, it's like, oh, how come I even hired the guy? Or smoke to your eyes. It's like, oh, man, it's just causing me grief. So that's the expansion on this. And you can imagine vinegar to your teeth. I thought knowing vinegar was pretty good for you. In fact, we almost fell over the other day. Inside Edition, we don't pay much attention to that. I think it came in after the news. But all of a sudden you see this Inside Edition. And they have a guy saying, this is flu season, and the vaccines didn't hit it quite right. They'll be 10% effective or whatever. So here's a few things you can do. In the morning when you get up, take 2 teaspoons of apple cider vinegar. And we, like, what? This is a doctor on a main news channel telling someone to take a couple shots of vinegar. And then he said, also, oregano works really well, so you can use it. It's antiviral, antimicrobial, antibacteria, anti-bad potential husband, just a few things that they mentioned. But we looked at each other again and we thought, oregano? Most people have never heard of oregano. And then there was something else that they said too. I can't remember what it was. But it's like, wow, so in this flu season, if this doesn't work, try that. I thought, yeah. And they're good, by the way. I think probably all of us know that apple cider vinegar has been used for years and years. Sauerkraut, by the way, is also good if you have stomach problems. But he didn't mention sauerkraut. I don't think that was the third one. So what you have here, vinegar to the teeth and a smoke to the eyes. Okay, let's go to another section or two and we'll come down to, let's give you some sections. If you take a look at how someone has studied the Proverbs and separated all the Proverbs into different categories, we can see that some say 12, some say 15. And what I'll do here is I'll just give you the 15 that I learned initially. Now, I have a paper, and as you can see, it's really long. And I think it's longer than a normal legal size. They call it in the United States. I forget what they call it in England. Maybe it's also called the legal size. But I think this came from England just based on the looks of it here. It's just a little bit longer than, I think, our legal paper in the United States. So I think that's where it came up with. I would have gotten this from probably Mr. Walker. Mr. Walker taught Old Testament Survey, and later on then, I actually was able to get a hold of his basic instructions that he gave on Proverbs. So that's what started me out on searching Proverbs. Now, the only problem that I've had with Proverbs is putting them into practice. That's the hard part when you stop to think of it, because there are so many. Remember, there are 975. So as you look at it, I'll give you some examples. You can go to, I don't know where I pulled this out of. Maybe somebody gave it to me. But this is 12 major topics, and how they broke it down is corporate, communication, leadership, wealth, parenting, husband, wife, sexual immorality, health and stress, friendship proverbs, fool proverbs, righteous, wicked proverbs, and greatness and goodness of God proverbs. So that's the 12 broken down there. There's another 12 that's similar to it. And as you go through the Proverbs, you could go to any study of just dealing with people. I have this study that I pulled out of my brain. I put it on a chip and put it into my brain. I wish we could do that, right? We kind of can. I'll come to that here as we wind up a little later on. But these were Proverbs for dealing with people in a wise, gentle, godlike manner. So when you go through a study, this was 3 pages long, and this was typed up, so there were no computers around at that time. Probably 1970. We didn't have our first computer until maybe 1986, I would say. I'd say, as long as my wife can type, I'm not getting a computer. As long as I can delegate. But they were slow. I think if you had, probably 250 megabytes, they said back then, that's all of the memory you would ever need. Can you imagine? And now they have a gigabyte, a terabyte, and I can't even remember all the rest, but I've heard of the names. It's just huge amounts that they have. And by the way, thinking of that too, we used to say, and I used to think, and they used to say this too, drinking alcohol too much will destroy 10% of your brain. You remember that? How many remember that? It might destroy all of your brain, actually, but they were talking just about memory, you know, while you're still fine. And then drinking in moderation, I believe, was the term. But then they found that we have, and this is recent, and I've said this before, but just to remind us all about God's creation, the human brain has more memory than all the computers over the entire earth. Now, maybe that was 2 years ago. Maybe there's going to be a time when it surpasses. But I used to tell people, well, my memory bank is already full, so I would have to delete some of the memory I have in order to put more in. And that's kind of an excuse of older people. But it doesn't work anymore because it doesn't happen. We have memory that can last us, guess what, 969 years for sure. And we say that because of Methuselah. So we have scriptures relating to dealing with a wise, gentle, godlike manner. Proverbs 9, just to show you what you can do. And by the way, if you have any Bible program, you can type one word in the Bible program. And then, depending on what you have, you can go over to all of the chapter, the books of the Bible. It'll show how many times it's in that one book. So you could head over there, click on Proverbs, and it'll only bring up the search in the book of Proverbs all at once. And you go through that, you can copy, you can paste, and you can start putting things in order, rearranging it all so you have it in sections. In this, Proverbs 9:7, reprove a scoffer, get shame. Rebuke the wicked, get a blemish. Don't reprove a scoffer, lest he hate you. So what you can do then is you can go to other scriptures under that basic main topic. And what I have there is, hatred stirs up strife. That's chapter 10 and verse 12. He who restrains his lips is wise, because it says, don't reprove a scoffer, so you restrain your lips. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver, and the lips of the righteous know what is acceptable. So I put those scriptures. Again, this is, Marion would have typed it. I would have written it down by hand and put these in there, and then she would have probably typed it. Because, again, it was before there were too many computers around. So what you have as far as categories, if you're interested, and I could actually send this out to you, I'll break it down into categories. And maybe if we really find time to do this, it's pretty simple, but maybe we could do some of it for you because it is helpful. But the 15 categories I have would be immorality, sexual immorality. Harlotry would be included in all of that. Child rearing. And when you look at this, child rearing, for example, is not one of the bigger ones, but there's probably 20 verses on child rearing. Correction, rebuking, reproving is all one category. And there's a lot on that. Meaning that if we're going to be wise, we definitely want to be corrected. Diligence, industriousness, and faithfulness, that's all in one category. Being foolish, wicked, perverse, being a scorner. There's a huge amount of scriptures on that in the book of Proverbs. Naturally, because if you have a book on wisdom, you go to the opposite, you go to the foolish side too. So it shows you how you can be wise, and then what not to do, otherwise we're going to be foolish. Friendship, God's control over man, human weaknesses, justice, honesty, marriage, scriptures on husbands and wives, neighbors, relationships, self-control and temperance, speaking/flattery, wealth, right and wrong use of it, and wisdom, the fear of the eternal, knowledge and instruction. Of course, that's going to be huge. So all of those are categories. Now, when you go to Proverbs chapter 1, here's the introduction, and I won't be going through too many Proverbs, but Proverbs chapter 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, so it tells you whose Proverbs they are or who put them together. The son of David, the king of Israel. Here's the specific purpose of these Proverbs. Now, when you read these, you think, you know, if I could memorize them all and put every single one into practice, because they're all extensions of loving God and loving your neighbor, every single one of them. These were daily practices, and if there's not something that comes up every single day concerning one of these Proverbs, then we're dead. We're not living, is what it would be. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, equity. So if we want all of this, if we want wisdom, if we want to be just, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion, a wise man will hear and increase learning. So if we want all of this, if we want to be wise, we will hear and we will increase learning. And a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. So you can see how important this is. And I've done a lot of study, and I have a section like this. This is just on wisdom right here, where I typed out all the scriptures so that my wife would be wiser. No, we didn't do it that way, but that's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. There are 15 pages here. And that's, of course, because Proverbs is about wisdom. So this would be one of the bigger sections. And when you go from chapter 4, I think chapter 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, is about 10 or 12 or 14 chapters all at once that have something about wisdom in them. This time after time. So we're lacking wisdom, and we are told in James, if we want wisdom, to pray to God. And God would say, go to the Proverbs. Go to the Proverbs and meditate and think about them, because that's where you're going to get your wisdom. And, of course, it takes God's Spirit to put it into practice, doesn't it? We just don't do it by ourselves. So you have all of this now. And let's take some few examples. We won't, again, go to a lot. But this morning, since we had or have 40 to 45 children in the congregation over there, I think we should set up a contest. And some of you would have to become Sarah. So, no, we can't do that. They just have 45 children over there. And, of course, there's one family that has 12. The Scarboroughs do. I went out there to anoint one of the kids a week or so ago, and they were all just finishing up with dinner. And it was just amazing to go in there. Usually they're scattered abroad, you know, throughout the house, so you don't see them all at once. But to go in and all of a sudden see 12 sitting at one table, and they're all yours. They belong to you. It's just, you just don't see that anymore. My dad would have had that because there were, I think, 11 kids in his family. And then, of course, his parents. So you just don't see that too much anymore. But I went through child rearing is what I did. with them just to show every scripture on child rearing. I won't do that here because it wouldn't cater to most of us. We have some children here, of course, but I'll just take a few of these. For example, well, with child rearing, parenting proverbs, they call them. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it, is one of the examples. Now, I pointed out this morning that that is not telling us spiritually that absolutely they will not depart, because there's another dimension, but it's talking about the way we live, our habits, our example. Your kids are going to be pretty much chip off the old block, or chip off the middle-aged block, or whatever it is. They're going to be like you. In fact, our son visited, what was it, a month ago, Thanksgiving, and he came to church. And about 2 weeks later, someone said, "You can sure tell that you must have looked like that exactly when you were young, like Dean." And I thought, no, not at all. But from just outsider's example, it's like, yep, they're going to act the way we do. They're going to think a lot like we do. But and they will have habits like we do. Sometimes it's the habits of maybe a grandfather or a grandmother or a great-grandmother. The DNA is very strong. But the training part is very important. We can train our children. They are smarter than dogs. The other day, we saw someone who had a dog, and he had the dog on a riser, and he was giving the dog commands. And that was to show that the dog knew no commands whatsoever. And he said, "Well, I'm going to show you how you can train that dog quickly to learn to sit." This was a young dog, and so he puts the dog on the riser, and the dog is on all 4 feet, and he takes a piece of dog food, or people food, whatever it was, and he put the dog food right on the forehead of the dog. And the dog, of course, was standing there, and he kept raising it, and the dog would be going back, and he would say, "Sit," and raise it a little bit more, "Sit." And, of course, the dog had to sit, because if it wanted the food, it had to go back. And the dog was going back and back until finally it was in a sitting position. And as soon as that dog hit the sitting position, gave it the sit, boom, and then gave it the dog food. Then he did it again, and then he did it again. Positive training, rather than don't stand up, sit. Don't stand up, sit. A lot of times we wonder where our kids get this no. When your kids start saying no, where did they get that? They got it from us. We said no so many times that that's all they know. You get it? That's all they know. But repeating positive instructions in a very short time, I think, what was it, maybe 15, 20 minutes, that dog knew what sit meant. And all the master would have to say without doing this anymore would be sit, and then reward the dog. The dog would sit. So it's interesting how you can train a dog, and we can train our children. We've always said, you know, get a child when they're really young, like a twig on a tree or a young tree that you plant, very supple. You can bend them any way. The branches you can just weave in any type of form you want. And they're going to be, you know, later on they may change a little bit, but overall you're going to have a child that you've trained. Start early. After 3 years, it pretty much doesn't work. After 12 years, definitely it doesn't work, or 13. Maybe, unless you have those first 3 years down well. Communication proverbs. A soft answer turns away wrath. I'll just give you a sampling here. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. So you have the opposite here, not a similar, but an opposite. We have a soft answer turns away wrath. A harsh word stirs up anger. Leadership Proverbs. I don't think I'll give you any of those because the CLTP is working on leadership examples, so I don't want to give that one away. But there is quite a few. Wealth Proverbs. Invest in the stock market when it fell to 9,000. One of the Proverbs. Wouldn't you, buy low, sell high. That's a good one. How do you know? I have never figured it out myself. So, husband-wife Proverbs. Rejoice, let your fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of your youth. So, having a wife, and it's a joyful marriage. Rejoice with the wife of your youth. In other words, have fun in marriage. Don't take things so seriously. You're going to both lose your hearing one of these days, and it's going to get worse. So when you do that, always think that my wife is complimenting me when I don't hear her. And it's always works out very well that way. So now we're at the point where we think that the other person is the one hard. I know I'm hard of hearing. And she... She's not as hard of hearing as I am, that's for sure. How about fool Proverbs? Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than him. These are just examples, and I don't need to go through too many more. Greatness and goodness of God, there's quite a few on that. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding, Proverbs 3. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your ways. In fact, Proverbs 16 says, that chapter is one of those chapters which basically deals with God's intervention in our lives. And again, having faith, as the sermonette, the subject was in the sermonette, having faith in God, and as long as it's true and not sinful and we are obeying God and what he says, it is going to turn out. Sometimes we don't see it. Okay, wrapping it up then, how do I remember all of these 975 Proverbs? How do I remember them? Well, the bottom line is when we have the Spirit of God places His law in our hearts. And unlike the Old Testament, we have the Spirit of God not just in the letter, but also in the Spirit. The Spirit of God gives us understanding of spiritually how to put all of these into effect. So that's number one. Number two is that God's words are spirit and they are life. So when we end up doing what's right, it's always going to turn out well. It's always going to turn out well. God's word, our spirit, they come from God. Jesus Christ is the Word of God. And so we remember that. But we still have to do something. And that is, God's word is a mirror. So we may think that what's in our heart is right. The double check is going to the mirror right here. Because we might think, well, yeah, this is right. My heart tells me it's right. But now go to a proverb or something else in the Bible. We can ask God to bring to mind what is in Proverbs. But we do have to study this word. It's spiritual. It's inspired by God. It is God-breathed. So we have to take a look at the Proverbs or anything else in the Bible and then ask ourselves, is this also my conclusion? Then we know we're following God's Spirit because we might think we're following God's Spirit when in actuality, just because we have a feeling, feelings aren't enough. Feelings can really get us in trouble. So sometimes we may feel like we should be merciful when that would be the wrong thing to do. Our whole society is based on spending good taxpayers' money to keep serial killers alive for 40 years in prison. It may feel good to not put them to death, but that's not God's way. So we go to the Bible, and what the Bible says is most important. Now, quite often, and probably most often, what we feel would be right in God's sight is probably right. is probably right. But sometimes we have to look at God's Word and the environment in which God states it, too. So the final check will be going right to the Bible, double-checking, am I really right? Is this what God has placed in my heart, or was this from a teacher in school, or was this from, you know, a movie that I saw? Because we can come up with standards that are not God's standards, and then think they're right. So, in all, then, if we resolve to put into practice the Ten Commandments and come up with 800 practices, where would we go? And the Proverbs. If we want 1,000, we read other portions of the Bible, and we can always be adding. Remember, there were 3,000 Proverbs. So there's a lot out there, and we need to meditate on God's law and put it into practice, just like Solomon didn't.